This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
I have a little clipping that when that verdict came in, there was a little story in the Oregonian on, I think, on page 10. And it was about, it was not a long story. It was about an 8-inch story. And think about that for a while. Here's this jury has reached a verdict that King was assassinated by a government conspiracy, and all it rates is a little 8-inch story on page 10 of the Oregonian. Now, I should say that this jury was a civil case. It was not a criminal case. And this man, Lloyd Jowers, who was sort of the principal defendant, was we'll get into that a little bit. He owned this cafe in Memphis, and he was part of the conspiracy. And he, at one time, after it, he confessed. And he offered to testify in a trial if he could be granted immunity, which is often done. He was not the shooter. He was just sort of part of the conspiracy. So he offered to testify on the stand under oath if he would get immunity or some kind of a deal, plea deal. The Memphis prosecutor turned him down, wouldn't do it. So in effect, that meant Lloyd Jowers did not testify. So let me go back to Carl Gibson's article. When MLK was killed on April 4th, he was speaking to sanitation workers in Memphis who were organizing to fight poverty wages and ruthless working conditions. This is me interjecting. This is why Dr. King was killed. He was an outspoken critic of the government's war in Vietnam, and his power to organize threatened the moneyed corporate interests who were profiting from the war. At the time of his death, he was gearing up for the Poor People's Campaign, an effort to get people to camp out on the National Mall to demand anti-poverty legislation. Essentially, the first inception, turn the page here, first inception of the Occupy Wall Street movement. And I might say that the people in Washington were really scared of this Poor People's Campaign. They sort of feared a huge crowd of people living on the Washington, on the National Mall, and getting in the way. You know, maybe they expected it to be something like the bonus marchers of the early 30s. Anyway, back to Carl Gibson. The government perceived him as a threat and had him killed. James Earl Ray was a designated fall guy, and a complicit media, taking its cues from government in fear of MLK, helped sell the official story of the assassination. Okay, this part is called a setup. The defendant in the civil trial, Lloyd Jowers, had been a Memphis police officer in the 1940s. He owned a restaurant called Jim's Grill, a staging ground to orchestrate the assassination, underneath a rooming house where the media alleges James Earl Ray shot Dr. King. During the trial, William Pepper, the attorney, played a tape of an incriminating 1998 conversation between Jowers, UN Ambassador Andrew Young, and Dexter King, MLK's son. Young testified that Jowers told them he, quote, wanted to get right with God before he died, wanted to confess it and be free of it. On the tape, Jowers mentions that those present at the meetings included Memphis police officer Merrill McCullough. Now, let me interject. There's a famous picture of Dr. King has been shot down on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel, and some of his friends are pointing off in the direction where the shots came from, and a younger black guy is sort of kneeling over Dr. King, kind of trying to see if he's alive. That man was Merrill McCullough, who was an undercover Memphis police officer who was sort of part of tracking Dr. King around. So those present at the meetings in Jim's Grill included Merrill McCullough, Earl Clark, a Memphis police officer, lieutenant, and known as the department's best marksman, another police officer, and two men who were unknown to Jowers but whom he assumed to be representatives of federal agencies. When Dr. King was in Memphis, he was under open or eye-to-eye federal surveillance by the 111th Military Intelligence Group based at Fort McPherson in Atlanta. Memphis Police Intelligence Officer Eli Arkin even admitted to having the group in his own office. During his last visit to Memphis, MLK was under covert surveillance, meaning his room at the Rivermont was bugged and wired. Even if he went out to the balcony to speak, his words were recorded via relay. William Pepper alleges in his closing argument during the King versus Jowers that such surveillance was actually done by the Army Security Agency, implying the involvement of at least two federal agencies. I think now we're going to take a little break, and we're going to go out to Membership Central, and I hope that you will take their words seriously and contribute something, give something to KBOO to keep this kind of information going, because you are likely not going to get it anywhere else. So out to Membership Central.
Yeah, thanks, Pear. We're here in Membership Central. You know, it's funny because whenever I hear that when I'm a listener, I think, oh, all the way out to Membership Central, as if it's some faraway place. And you know, it's not. Really, we're all kind of in the same big room. I can see Pear, he can see me if he looked up, and you know, we're all here together, and we're all trying to put this thing together and keep this experience going and keeping it live for you, the listening audience. And you know, if you call right now at 877-500-526, you could become a part of this experience, even from your own, the convenience of your own home and the convenience of your own computer. Maybe you're at work, maybe you're, I don't know, at a cafe somewhere, listening through your headphones. Go online, kboo.fm, and contribute and join this experience of live radio.
That's right. It's local radio. It's radio produced by volunteers who are here from the community to produce news and information for our own backyard, but also the community of the entire world, as folks listen online from just about everywhere at kboo.fm. If you're listening online right now, go ahead and click that tip jar over in the upper right corner. It says donate today. It looks kind of like a pickle jar, and it's there for your membership needs as you connect back into the station that supports your, you know, intellectual process, let's just say, your analytical thought, your strive, your thirst for information and ideas. This is a place that you know you can tune to make sure you have a constant stream of new ideas, that you can look deep behind the headlines and into the information that is actually part of the mechanisms of how things happen. I have always appreciated Pear's programming on the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, and here we are on the anniversary of that. It is an important thing to make sure that this information continues to go out into the community. I know many people still have not heard this, and it's information that we need to know. We need to be aware of our history so we can direct our future. That's a way for you to connect in right now, is to bring your credit card to the phone and dial 877-500-5266 so that you can become an active, supportive member of your community radio station instantaneously. You can pledge $40, $60. Maybe somebody listening right now could be a hero to KBOO, a friend to KBOO, and pledge $1 every day. That's $30 a month. You can do it on a monthly electronic funds transfer. You can do it all at once. You could have us bill you. Whatever works for you. Please give us a call, 877-500-5266. Help us reach $250 by 10 o'clock and keep your community radio station well supported with your help. 877-500-5266.
Okay, back to the article. It was in the reader-supported news. And the article is by Carl Gibson. I might say that this trial in Memphis in 1999 was a civil trial. The King family had come to believe that James Earl Ray was not the real killer of Dr. King, and they were filing this suit as they wanted to get it on the record. They asked for $1 sort of token damages, but they wanted a verdict on the record, and they got it. So we've already talked about Lloyd Jowers, who also gave an interview to Sam Donaldson on Primetime Live in 1993. The transcript was read during the trial and was revealed that Jowers openly talked about being asked by produce warehouse owner Frank Liberto to help with MLK's murder. Liberto had mafia connections and sent a courier with $100,000 to Jowers, who owned a local restaurant, with instructions to hold the money at his restaurant. Now, the witness is John McFerrin, who owned a store in Memphis, who was making a pickup at Liberto's warehouse at 5:15, 45 minutes before the assassination. McFerrin testified that he overheard Liberto tell someone over the phone, quote, "Shoot the SOB on the balcony," unquote. Other witnesses included cafe owner LaVita Addison, who was friends with Liberto. She recalled him confiding to her that he, quote, had Martin Luther King killed, unquote. Addison's son Nathan Whitlock also testified. He asked Liberto if he killed MLK, and he responded, quote, "I didn't kill, but I had it done." When Whitlock pressed him about James Earl Ray, Liberto replied, quote, "He wasn't nothing but a troublemaker from Missouri. He was a front man, a setup man." And the back door of Lloyd Jowers' restaurant led to a thick crop of bushes across the street from the Lorraine Motel where Dr. King was shot. On the taped confession to Andrew Young and Dexter King, Jowers says after he heard the shot, Lieutenant Earl Clark, who is now deceased, laid a smoking rifle at the rear of his restaurant. Jowers then disassembled the rifle, wrapped it in a tablecloth, and prepared it for disposal. The corporate media says it was James Earl Ray who shot MLK, and he did it from the second-floor bathroom window of the rooming house across the street from the Lorraine Motel. That was a rooming house upstairs from Jim's Cafe. The official account alleges the murder weapon was dropped in a bundle and abandoned at Dan Kniep's storefront just before he made his getaway. But even those authorities and media admit that the bullet that tore through MLK's throat didn't have the same metallurgical composition as the bullets in the rifle left behind. And Judge Joe Brown, a weapons expert called to testify by Pepper in the 1999 trial, said the rifle allegedly used by Ray had a scope that was never sighted in, meaning that the weapon in question would have fired far to the left and far below the target. The actual murder weapon was disposed of by taxi driver James McCraw, a friend of Jowers. William Hamblin testified that McCraw told him this story over a 15-year period whenever he got drunk. McCraw repeatedly told Hamblin that he threw the rifle over the Memphis, Arkansas bridge, meaning that the rifle is at the bottom of the Mississippi River to this day. And according to Hamblin's testimony, Kniep said that he saw the bundle dropped in front of his store before the actual shooting occurred. Well, the story goes into other parts of the story was that two black firefighters who were working at a fire station across the street from the Lorraine Motel were each transferred to different fire stations. There was a black Memphis police detective who was assigned to Dr. King's security detail. He was also removed from the scene an hour before the shooting and sent home. There was also a Black Panther-inspired group called the Invaders who were staying at the Lorraine Motel to help organize a planned march for the striking garbage workers. The Invaders were told to leave the motel after getting into an argument with members of Dr. King's entourage. The origins of the argument are unclear, although several sources affirm that the Invaders have been infiltrated by Merrill McCullough of the MPD, who later went to work for the CIA. And finally, the TAC-10 police escort of several Memphis police cars that accompanied King's security detail were pulled back the day before the shooting by an inspector. With all possible obstacles out of the way, MLK was all alone just before the assassination. Also, as in the original story had, the shooter was he was in the yard behind the Jim's Grill and the rooming house. He was in a bunch of bushes. And from there, he had a clear sight of the Lorraine Motel, which was sort of on one block over. And the Memphis police inspector, Sam Evans, this is the day after the shooting, called the public works office and told the administrator to have a crew destroy that crop of bushes. Now, this is really kind of odd. This is a crime scene, and they are cutting down the bushes. But this is part of the cover-up, that the bushes were destroyed. And also, other witnesses had seen figures coming from the bushes and jumping down a little retaining wall to a sidewalk and disappearing. So these are the, some of the basic facts about the assassination of Dr. King. And let me repeat this again. This is by Carl Gibson, and it is from an article called How the Government Killed Martin Luther King Jr., and it is on a website called Reader Supported News, and I think everybody ought to get on their keyboards and check out that article for themselves, because when it's on the screen, there are underlined parts where you can link to other bits of evidence. It's not all just here on the printed page. So we'll get back. We're going to go out to Membership Central. I hope you will keep this in mind. Remember that nowhere else are you going to hear some of this information except on KABU. So please be generous.
Yep, that's right. We're back here at Membership Central, the mothership of fundraising here at KBOO. You know, it might be a bit of a stretch, but I can't help but think that this iconic day, Thursday, April 4th, the assassination of Martin Luther King, maybe it could be for you a call to action. Maybe you are thinking about this date and remembering this day, you know, if you perhaps we're not born yet. Maybe this is a time where you can, I don't know, make your voice be heard in some way, stand up against the tyranny that was part of the death of this great man. And you know, you can do that. It may sound trite, but this radio station brings you this information. This radio station is your link to the news that you don't hear, to the issues, to the facts. At 877-500-5266, you can become a member. You can stake your claim in member-supported radio and speak your voice in the community by keeping this radio station afloat.
Absolutely true, Ivan. This is Ani. It's my pleasure to be here this morning because it is time that we get your support for community radio. I love watching people take right action. I love it when KABU can inspire people to take right action. And the information that you're receiving right now is the importance for you to become a member of KABU Community Radio today. It's an important thing you can do for yourself and for your community. As you know, it helps to empower the entire community to have access to these airwaves, unfettered by corporate interests, funded by you, community members. In fact, produced by you, community members, volunteers, come in and make the radio happen. We put the radio in your ears. Why? Because, well, we do it for the love of the information, for the arts, for the culture, for all of that that KABU shares with you throughout the day. Per Fagering has been a volunteer here for well more than 20 years, I would dare say. And the programs that he presents to you are so vital, so important. digging really deep into that information, providing you information that you can put into your own analysis of how things have come to be and how we need to steer them in the future. I want to thank some folks who have stepped up to the plate this morning to support KABU. I want to thank Stephen, a very brand new member. Thank you so much, Stephen, in Southeast Portland. And I want to thank Jeffrey for renewing. Thank you so much, Jeffrey, in Southeast. And Stephanie, also staying with us and renewing in Oregon City. It's so great to get this kind of support, and we need to hear from you right now as we raise $250 before 10 o'clock. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
Yes, we are urgently calling you to action. We are not panicky. We are urgent in this call to action and bringing your voice to the airwaves via your credit card or your checkbook or whatever means necessary. You can come down to this radio station at 20 Southeast 8th and come in, take a tour, see where the action happens, see where this live broadcasting comes from, and meet the voices, meet the faces behind the voices that you hear perhaps every day, perhaps once a week. I don't know, how much ever you listen to this radio station. Take a moment and think about that and think about what this means to you. And we can only keep on the air through money because this is the kind of society that we live in. So we need your support at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
You know, every day during our spring membership drive, you have a chance to win a little bit of KABU's history. You can become a part of KABU's legacy by dialing Everyone Wins, and everyone's a part of the legacy. You just dial 877-500-5266 and say you want to become a member of KABU today. But I want you to know that this very day, we have a poster online that you could win a reproduction of. It's one of our historic posters from our archives of producing special events for the community. Today's is something near and dear to my heart. I was at this event. It was a brilliant night. It was Howard Zinn speaking on the 500-year anniversary of Columbus's landing in Hispaniola. So it's the Reclaiming the People's History, an evening with radical historian Howard Zinn, 1492 to 1992. It was at PSU. And if you would like to have a chance to win your very own reproduction of this very style and poster, go to our website, kboo.fm, click on that poster, and submit your entry before 3 o'clock today, local time here in Portland, and you'll have a chance of winning that poster. Also, check out the website while you are there. And hey, while you're on the website, donate online at kboo.fm. Support the Thursday morning radio zine. Support public affairs and the 100 volunteers that bring you the radio zines each and every morning, like Ivan.
Yes.
Being one of the newer volunteers working with the Old Mole Collective.
Yes, the Old Mole every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Tune into that. And, if you do go online, you can see that shirt, which is the brand new thank you gift that we have for this very spring membership drive.
That's right. It's a special limited time offer.
Mm-hmm.
Spring membership drive. You can get that shirt. People are talking about it.
They sure are.
It's right there. You can see it on the website again, kboo.fm. But give us a call. Maybe that's the easiest way for you to connect on in right now. We'd love to hear from you. We'll leave you with that number once again, 877-500-5266.
Okay, we're going to kind of wrap up now. There's so much information in this article and also in books. The attorney William Pepper has written two books on the King assassination. Pepper was not only the attorney for James Earl Ray, he was also a colleague of Dr. King in the peace movement previously. And William Pepper has written two books. I think the latest one is Act of State. And this just goes into great detail. Also, we have interviewed William Pepper here on KABU. We have also interviewed Dick Gregory, who rose to fame as a comedian but was really an activist all his life. And he was one of the first people to doubt the official explanation of King's assassination. We have interviewed Dick Gregory and also Cynthia McKinney. So anyway, there are voices. The thing that has always puzzled me, I find it very hard to think about this, is that the evidence is out there, so much is known, and there's so little outrage. You know, we revere Dr. King for obvious reasons. We commemorate his birthday. We commemorate his dream speech and his anti-war speech. But how many people really want to get to the bottom of who really killed him? I find it hard to explain that. I really do. So, but we do know who kind of, we know who was behind it, and we know who profited by it. This country has been at war ever since. We've been at war constantly, and it was basically what I would call the war party that had Dr. King eliminated. We've been at war ever since, and that I think that kind of sums it up right there. Stay tuned for Flashpoint, which is coming right up, and then Between the Covers, and then Black Book Talk at 11:30. Thank you very much.
Hey, good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up at 11 o'clock this morning on Between the Covers, Peter Rock, novelist and professor at Reed College, discusses his latest book, The Shelter Cycle. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the guest is writer Jonathan R. Miller, whose latest work, Delivery, features a biracial Somali man who is blinded while defending his daughter. Eric Cascadia is not airing this morning. Instead, we've got an hour-long Flashpoints, and that is coming up next on KBOO.
Tune in Thursday night at 8 p.m. for Guess Who's Coming to Radio, when Jamila will be honoring ancestor Curtis Mayfield. She will explore his words and music through time, from his experience with the Impressions to his solo works, as well as songs he's penned for several artists, including Aretha Franklin and Mavis Staples. Again, that's Thursday at 8 p.m. for a Curtis Mayfield Artist Special on Guess Who's Coming to Radio.
Keep on pushing!
Flashpoints will take an in-depth look at the smoldering situation between the U.S. and North Korea as the saber-rattling on both sides continues to escalate. This is dangerous. We'll also hone in on the nuclear threat that underscores how dangerous the situation is. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. The U.S. has announced it is moving an advanced missile defense system to the Pacific island of Guam as North Korea steps up its warlike rhetoric. We're going to talk about that. The latest statement coming out of North Korea, quote-unquote, formally informs the Pentagon it has ratified a possible nuclear strike. North Korea has threatened to target the U.S. and South Korea in recent weeks. Well, we're joined now by Christine Hong. She is a professor at the University of California at Santa Cruz, and she knows a great deal about what's going on here. Professor Hong, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thank you, Dennis.
Well, it's good to have you with us. There's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of disinformation. There's a lot of patriotic reporting coming out of the U.S. Give us your best shot on what's going on right now, what the situation really is, and how dangerous it is.
You put your finger on it. You know, what we see is all this media reporting that singularly ascribes blame to North Korea, which is portrayed as a kind of unquestionable evil. And so, you know, the sense of, like, what the U.S. is doing in supposed response to North Korean provocations, therefore seems eminently justified. But I think that we're really in a crisis point. And to me, it doesn't feel dissimilar to the kind of media rhetoric that surrounded the run-up to the U.S. invasion in Iraq. And during that time, too, you just had a kind of steady drumbeat to war, you know, that entailed kind of vilification of Iraq, in this case, North Korea. And so I think the easiest thing to say is, if we were to look at the facts, what do those facts tell us? And this is just one example of the kind of inverted logic that you see operative coming out of the media and coming out of the U.S. Administration. In a recent press conference, Chuck Hagel was asked, it was a Pentagon press conference, he was asked whether or not the U.S. sending B-2 stealth bombers from Missouri to fly, to conduct a sortie over South Korea and drop what the DOD called inert munitions in a simulated sort of run against North Korea. He was asked whether or not those actions and others on the part of the United States could be understood as provocative. And he said, no, they can't be understood as provocative. And it was dutifully reported as such. And so what you have is a real sort of skewed informational landscape in which the average person listening to such reports can't make heads or tails of what's happening. And so if you're going to actually look at this in a kind of historical perspective, both recent history and longer history, you realize that for what's happened ever since Kim Jong-un has come into his leadership position in North Korea, what you realize is that the U.S. has had a policy of regime change. And, you know, we tend to think of regime change sort of operations and initiatives as being a kind of signature or a hallmark policy of the Bush administration. But actually, we've seen under President Barack Obama a persistence in a kind of U.S. policy of getting rid of those powers that it finds uncooperative around the world. And so after Kim Jong-il passed away, the U.S. and South Korea launched the biggest and the longest set of war exercises that it has historically. And for the first time openly, it exercised something called OPLAN 5029. And this is a U.S.